All right. We're beginning here on the top of Kuf Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, nine lines down. Just to remind ourselves, we had the drasha that was brought in the Braita and then explained by Rava, which is the pasuk that is found by the Shvatim, which says, "V'zelachem atamei basheretz hashoreitz al haaretz." And then it continues to list the Shvatim, acholed v'achbar v'atzav limineu. The Gemara is speaking in this context about the Akhbar, because the Akhbar was mentioned in our Mishnah. And so therefore, the Gemara begins by trying to understand the nature of the Akhbar that is mentioned here. We have an Akhbar Shebeyam, and we have an Akhbar Shebaaretz. We'll see later today's daf. I noted yesterday that the Gemara has a belief that whatever animal is found on the Yabasha is also, there's a parallel animal that's found by Yam. So there's an achbar shebayam, a sea animal that looks like an achbar, that has similar properties, but it lives in the sea. And then you have achbar al haaretz. The question was, when it says achbar in the Torah, how inclusive is the term achbar in the Torah? When it says achbar, does that mean achbar al haaretz? Or does that also mean achbar shebayam? To that, the Gemara brought the pasuk, which is v'zeh lachem tamei b'sheretz hashoreitz al haaretz. So only those that are found on the land have that din. And the Gemara had started with the Hava Mina, saying, well, there's Chulda, and there's Achbar. And just like by Chulda, it's only the one on the land, so too by the Achbar, it should be the only one on the land. So you might not have needed a Pasuk. The Gemara rejected that, because the Braita says, a Chulda, the reason why it's only Al Haaretz, is because that's the only Chulda that there is. So everything under the name Chulda is included. So maybe everything under the name Achbar should be included. Talmud Lomar, Al Haaretz, only on the land. Then the Gemara says, you would have thought Al Haaretz is limiting not only to the fact that it's only Achbar Shal Haaretz, but maybe it's only Achbar Shal Haaretz when he's on the land. What happens when the Achbar goes into the sea or is in the water? Maybe a Sheretz B'mayim won't be Mitameh because it's only Al Haaretz that it is Mitameh. So the Gemara said, again there we have Hashoreitz. The word Hashoreitz is extraneous. And so what does shoreitz come to teach me? It means anywhere that it is shoreitz. The meaning of shoreitz, as we noted yesterday, can be either mean richush v'ninua, as Rashi says, which means to crawl around and to move, creepy crawly things. So that would mean anywhere that it moves, then it'd be tamei. That's irrespective of whether it's on the land or in the water. Well, but the Gemara said, maybe not. The word shoreitz can also mean prey or vey, to reproduce in large numbers. So maybe the shoreitz over here is not going to teach you anywhere it moves, but rather only those that reproduce, only those that are prey or vey, which would have excluded the achbar that was mentioned in our Mishnah, which was half basar, half adama, or was spontaneously generated. It does not come through reproduction. So maybe that's what the shoreitz was coming to reject. And again, there, the Gemara compared it to chulda. Just like a chulda is only when it's prey or vey, so too, maybe by the achbar, but maybe anything that's a chulda is included, so maybe everything that's an achbar is included. So the Gemara said, we can't conclude from the chulda, we have to say, Talmud Lomar, basheretz, which is the third word that's found in that pasuk, zech lamachem atameh basheretz, hashoreitz, al haaretz. The Gemara's darshan all three of those words. Rashi says that's because the word basheretz is extraneous as well, because subsequent to the list of the shratzim, it says, l'tumeim lachem b'chol hasharetz. You don't need the word sheretz anymore, and therefore it's extraneous. Others note that the bet, ba sheretz, amongst the shratzim. From that we learn that the achbar, that is half adama and half achbar, is included in the terms of sheretz. Given that it is included, then the word shoreitz must mean to creepy, crawly things, or wherever they go. That means that the sheretz, al haaretz, whether it's on the land, or whether it's in the water, is tamei. That is the conclusion of Rava, based on this Braita that we have here, that the way to learn these three words is to tell you that the Hava Mina is Achbar Al Haaretz, Achbar Shebayam. Al Haaretz comes to tell you not Achbar Shebayam. Then Hashoreitz comes to tell you even Achbar Shal Haaretz in the water is Tamei. And the last word, Basheretz, comes to include an Achbar that is half Basar and half Afar, that even though it's not mashritz, it is included in the din of sheretz. That is Rava's explanation. Now we're going to have an alternate view as I explained this, that would come to a different conclusion. The thing I would just mention is that the Rambam, in discussing this half akbar and half basar animal, says about that, that he's heard from others that they know of these animals, or they've seen these animals. But he ends off with a very interesting point. He says, "Bahu pelagadol." He says, it's really strange. I don't know that such a thing should exist. So in his, from his rational side, he's saying that it's really strange that it exists. On the other hand, he's hearing from people that these items do exist. And it was commonly believed in the time of the Rambam, and even before that, that there existed such animals, and that in Egypt, that there were these mice that came out of the earth that were not something that was prey or vey, but rather spontaneously generated. That goes on until the 1700s, where Reddy does the experiments to show that maggots don't come from meat. And then it's finally proved when Louis Pasteur does more experiments to show that there's no such thing as spontaneous generation. But the Gemara here clearly is referencing to what was the common belief at the time, that there were these spontaneously generated animals. The Tiferet Yisrael even writes in defense of Chazal against the heretics. I saw an article that was written by Shneur Lyman, an article about this Tiferet Yisrael, where he quotes the Latin name for these animals, and he says that they exist. He's quoting from a very prestigious German author who wrote about life, animals, organic beings, and development of civilization. And he shows how, when he quotes the Latin term that he quotes, it wasn't necessarily the correct interpretation of it. It was a footnote, and the footnote was saying that in all likelihood, that which was being described was this animal, because this animal has an odd shape to it. It has longer legs on one side, shorter legs on the other side, and you could believe that it was maturing over time, because it looks like it's imbalanced, the animal. He doesn't cite it as being the animal. He just says maybe that's what they thought. But the Tiferet Yisrael quotes that as being the mouse that is described in the Gemara, and he gives the Latin name for it. And interestingly enough, Professor Lyman goes through that to show how it was a somewhat of a misquote of what this author had meant, and that in all likelihood, he goes through a lot of proofs of this. We've spoken in the past that when we deal in the scientific realm or areas of knowledge outside of the Torah, even though Chazal were extremely gifted and maybe even had Ruach HaKodesh, they still were subject in general to the knowledge of their times. And so they're trying to address halachically what is the story with regards to a half achbar and a half basar. Not necessarily that they had ever seen one. Not necessarily that they knew of one. That was the common belief at their time by the best of the scientists at their time. And even through the time of the Rishonim, Rambam himself quotes this concept, even though he himself is suspect of the matter. And so they were dealing with the halachic ramifications of whatever information was presented to them, or that knowledge was at the time. That's his conclusion, that's his thesis, and he shows many Rishonim and other proofs to indicate that that is the case. There's obviously a dissenting side who believe that the words of Chazal are infallible, and that when we deal with these medical issues, you have to think of them in understanding what they were saying. Maybe it was just that it was invisible reproduction, or other ways to try to deal with whatever Chazal are saying over here. Especially in the realm of Agadata, there's a lot more room to work with them. You have a lot more latitude where if they're taking whatever is the knowledge of the time, or even if the items don't exist, they're trying to get a message across. They're not necessarily talking to the exact phenomenon. Over there, you have a lot more latitude, especially if you don't take it very literally, which is, according to Rav Avram ben Rambam, is a way to ruin all Agadata. It makes a fool out of Chazal and out of everybody if you take it literally. You need to look allegorically the messages or the parables that they were trying to convey, and that is a much better way to read the Agadata than rather to take it literally. So now, the Gemara here continues and says, Amarle haumi rabbonon l'robo. So now, this rabbonon said to Robo, why don't you learn the psukim in the following manner? Eima basheretz latuye achbar shebeketsu basar veketsu adama. So like you said, let us say that basheretz comes to include this achbar that is spontaneously generated. Hashoreitz, kol shehu shoreitz. And learn the word hashoreitz to mean anything that moves, meaning of the sheretz here would be richush v'ninua, anything that is a creepy, crawly thing. V'afilu achbar shebeyam. Even including the achbar shebeyam. V'im ishum ala aretz. What is he going to do with ala aretz? Ala aretz itameh. Yeradayam lo itameh. Ala aretz won't teach you which species is problematic. It'll tell you where they are problematic. So according to this version of the Limud, ala aretz comes to teach you that only on land is there a din of tumat shratzim. But it doesn't define for you which species. Then hashoreitz tells you anything that moves. Anything that is creepy crawly. That means both achbar she ba'aretz and achbar she beyam. And then the basheretz will come to include an achbar chetzio basar and chetzio adama. In that way, according to this rabbonan, then you would have it that the achbar aretz, which would include also the spontaneously generated achbar, and the achbar she beyam will be tmeim, but rak al aretz, only on the land. That's what the al aretz does. Versus the way that Rava's conclusion came, which was that only an achbar shel aretz is tamei, whether it's al aretz, whether it's bamayim, and included in achbar shel aretz is a spontaneous generated achbar. To this, Amarlei, this is what Rava responds to that limud, umiachar deshavite liyam makom tuma, once you made the waters a place of tuma, malihocha, malihocha. Why should it make a difference where it is? Meaning that if you're already including the achbar shebeyam, why would you have ala aretz limit where the achbar shebeyam is tameh? Rava is indicating that it doesn't make so much sense what you're saying. He says, my approach is much more logical. I limited it to the achbar ala aretz, but then I say that the achbar ala aretz, no matter where it's found, is tameh. So that's how I deal with the mayim part of it. You, on the other hand, are saying that an achbar shebeyam and an achbar shebeyam are tamehim, but only ala aretz. So once you made the achbar shebeyam tameh, and its primary place of residence is in the mayim, now you're going to tell me only when it's ala aretz it's tameh? Rava says that doesn't make so much sense, and therefore he rejects that view. Now, the Baalei HaTosafot over here bring, v'im tomar, lamali kra debasheretz, memela, even the ikele kushe lukula, ulukhumra, lukhumra makshinan. Whenever you have a choice of hekesh, the Gemara always says, I have a choice of comparing achbar to chulda over here. So I compare achbar to chulda, one of those will lead to a kula. I have an achbar and a chulda, and one of them lead to a chumra. So why, according to both of these interpretations, do I need basheretz in order to include the achbar, that's chetzio basar and chetzio adama? You gave me two options. You can either compare it to a chulda and say, just like a chulda reproduces, so too an achbar must reproduce, and that would exclude a spontaneously generated mouse, and then that would be the kula. Or you can compare it to chulda and say anything under the name chulda is included, so maybe anything under the name achbar is included, and that would include an achbar shel chatzi basar, chatzi adama. So I have two choices. If I have a kula and the chumra to do a hekesh between achbar and chulda, I'm going to go the chumra. And so why do I need a pasuk to tell me to go to chumra? Why don't I naturally go to chumra? So to that, the Ri says, had it not been for basheretz, you would have opted to say that mashritz does not mean to be a creepy crawly thing, but rather to be something that reproduces. Remember yesterday, and we noted it again today, the word sheretz has two meanings to it, and they're probably derived one from the other. One is to be a sheretz, which means to be a creepy crawly thing, and the other one is to be mashritz, one who gives birth at a high rate of reproduction. So the Ri says that the high rate of reproduction is the better interpretation of the word. But here, where we're going to interpret the word to mean a creepy quality thing and not a reproducing item, there you need another limud in the Torah to tell you to go in that direction rather than what would have been the natural direction of interpretation in this case. So that's why they needed a basheretz to tell you which way to do the hekesh. Even though naturally you would have done the hekesh l'chumrah, but over here, it would have undermined the meaning of the word mashritz and put it in a less likely meaning. And therefore, they needed basheretz to teach you about a chatzi basar and a chatzi adama. Then, in addition, Tosafot says here, when Rava says, what's the difference if it's in the water or if it's on the land? He's pointing to Rava then, when you have a sheretz al aretz, Why don't you just say, okay, wherever it goes, it goes. For Rava, had it been a Sharetz al Aretz, you might have thought that it was limited to being al Aretz. That's not an illogical thing, to say the one that lives on land, the Tumah is limited to being on land. Then the exclusion would have been then al Aretz tells you not the one that's in the water, and not the one on the land in the water. I mean, the water is off limits completely in terms of Tumah. That's why you need Hashoreis to teach you, not only is it the one on the land, it's the one on the land, even when it goes into the water, according to Rava. So that's how Tosafot deals with these different limudim that we mentioned, one from Rava and one from the Rabbanan, and the difference between the outcome of those two. Now the Gemara asks on all of these limudim, V'hai ala aretz mi bayile, don't we need ala aretz, dosi safik tuma tzafa, to tell you that a safik tuma that is floating on the water, we go the kula. The Amar of Yitzchak Bar Dimi, of Yitzchak Bar Dimi tells us, ala aretz, dosi safik tuma tzafa. If you have floating tuma on the water, even though it's a reshuta yachid, and we know the din with regards to tuma reshuta yachid is safik tuma reshuta yachid is the chumra, as opposed to safek tumah b'shut rabim, which is the kula, and we say it's tahor, over there we would say it's tameh. This is an exception to that rule to tell you that only ala aretz is a safek tumah tameh. But safek tumah that is floating on the water, there you would go to kula and say it's tahor. So if you have a safek as to whether you touched a dead sheretz that was floating in the water, we would say that the safek is latara and not the tumah. But we learned that from ala aretz. If you use al haaretz for that, then you don't have it available to tell you where the sheretz was. So Gemara's answers, tarte al haaretz pive. The word al haaretz appears twice in the Torah. One in the pasuk where we said, se lachem atamei v'sheretz v'shuretz al haaretz. So that's one time that it's mentioned. And then later on in the psukim, it comes back and mentions the shretzim again. And in that context, it also mentions al haaretz, which is v'kol ha-sheretz, ha-shoretz, al haaretz, sheketz hu lo ye'achel. Later on, we mention the al haaretz associated with the sheretz as well, number of psukim later, about 10 psukim later, and there again, it uses al haaretz. So you have two al haaretzes, one for our limud that we're discussing here, and one for the limud of Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdime, with regards to the tzofek tuma shetzafa al pnei amayim. Tanu Rabbanan, atzav leminehu. Then the list of the shretzim that is mentioned in the Torah, it says, v'zeh lachem atamei v'sheretz v'sheretz haaretz, hacholeid v'achbar, which we've discussed already, v'atzav leminehu. We also discussed leminehu, maybe splitting them up according to Rav, atzav, which is either in the modern days a turtle, might be that in the Torah it's a reference to a toad, but toad the turtle, limineu. Limineu seems to indicate that there are other items that are included or subsumed under the term tzav. Lahavi, to include. So these are the other items that are included in here. Ha'arod. The word arod is translated differently in Shas, and that is because sometimes it appears to be that the arod is a scorpion. Like, for instance, in the story of Rav Chanina ben Dosa, where there was this city where people used to get stung by a scorpion when they left the city, and Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa comes to the city, and then he sticks his foot over the hole of this arod, and the arod comes to sting Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, and when it comes to sting Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, the scorpion dies instead of Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. And from that, Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa says, you should know, it's not the scorpion that is meimitu mechaye, el achet meimitu mechaye. There, clearly, in the story, it's speaking about something that stings, it's found in a hole. It seems to be that the arod is a reference to a scorpion. In other places, the arod seems to be a much bigger animal that is being referenced to. And over there, in those cases, it seems to be referencing to a mule or a wild donkey or something of that size or shape. And therefore, in different places within Chazal, depending on the context, it has different meanings. In our context over here, we're going to see in a second, but it's more likely that we're referencing to the scorpion than to the larger animal that's associated with this name, Harod. If it's a subset of a tzav, it's unlikely that we're speaking about a very large animal. It's more likely we're speaking about a scorpion. V'chein ha-nifilim, or if you look on the side here, he says that the girsa should be u-ben ha-nifilim, which would mean then it's a species, not v'chein, but u-ben ha-nifilim is the name of the species, which could be a skink or some other animal that is under the subset of Tzav, the salamandra, would seem to be over here a salamander, although from the description it may not be so easy to say that it's a salamander. So Rashi mentions over here that the salamandra is the animal or sheretz that's created out of fire, burning these eitzim of the myrtle that is done through sorcery or witchcraft. And someone who anoints themselves with their blood, they are fireproof. I mean, that the idea being, since the animal is created through the fire, it has some sort of fireproofing in it. And therefore, if you anoint yourself with the blood of it, you will be fireproof. And Rabbi Akiva has a mesora that this is a subspecies of the tzav. The Gemara, in other places like in Sanhedrin, mentions it as a fireproofing agent. And there it tells the story of Chizkiyahu HaMelech that his mother anointed him in the blood of the salamander so that when his father threw him into the fire, he survived the fire. And based on this idea of the salamander that is created out of the fire, which will also precipitate the Gemara that's upcoming about Rabbi Akiva's great wonderment about the creation, about certain things that come from the fire, and it's a reference to this salamander. These three are classified as subsets or under the category of tzav, and not to be surprised by the fact that the Gemara earlier said that when it mentions these species, that many types of species have subsets that are large categories, and therefore just because it says tzav doesn't limit it just to the tzav, there are all these other animals that are subsumed under that category, and here the Gemara is giving you examples of them. Whenever Rabbi Akiva would reach this pasuk, Omer, Ma rabu masech Hashem, how great are your creations, Hashem? Yesh lecha briot, gedelot bayam. You have animals that grow up or mature, are produced in the water. Yesh lecha briot, gedelot bayavisha. And then you have animals that grow up or live on the dry land. Shibayam, those that are in the water, Yomaleolot Vayabasha, Biad Metot, those that grow up in the water, those that exist in the water, as soon as they come on the land, they die. Shibayabasha, those that on the land, Yomale Yordotiyam, Biad Metot. As soon as they go into the water, then they die right away. Just in back of my head now, it's starting to reverberate the mashal that Rabbi Akiva gives about the fish and learning Torah when you're in the Mayim. And why should the fish come out of water? Because when he comes out of water, he's going to die. It's very similar to this statement of Rabbi Akiva over here. And then he continues, V'yesh lecha briot, gedelot ba'ur. There are animals that grow up in the fire. V'yesh lecha briot, gedelot ba'vir. And there are animals that grow up in the air. Shiba'ur, those that grow up in the fire, ilmale olot le'avir, if they come out of the fire, they go into the air, miyad metot, they would die right away. Shiba'avir, those that are in the air or in the maybe colder climates, Yumaleyo Dort Lur, if they end up in a fire, Miyad Meitot, they would die immediately. Ma Rabuma Sech Hashem, how great or how wondrous are your creations, Hashem? In that there are all these individual or different types of creations, and each one of them is unique, has unique properties, and those unique properties make it that it only exists in a certain environment. That's amazing what Hashem has done, that each one of them has what they need in order to survive in that location. Tarabanan. This is the statement that I referenced to before with regards to the Chuda and the Akhbar, which is called Sheyesh B'Yavasha, Yesh B'Yam. Anything that's found on the dry land has a parallel animal in the sea, Chutz Mena Chuda. The exception of the Chuda, which is only found on the Aretz, is not found B'Yam, and that was the nature of the discussion in the Braita that we brought before. Amar Rabbi Zeira, my Korah, what's the pasuk that tells you that? Because it says, Hazinu kol yoshvei chaled, that all those that reside in the chaled should take heed, pay attention to, should listen to. So chaled, as Rashi notes over here, means anyone who's found in the inhabited world. So it's on the dry land. And so that tells you, why does it use the term chaled to describe people who are living in the world? People obviously live on land. They don't live in the water. And so why doesn't it just say Yoshvei Olam? Why does it use Yoshvei Choled? That's because the word Chuda is synonymous with being on the land, because the Chuda is only found on the land. So just like we saw with the word Sheretz comes to be synonymous with high rates of reproduction and creepy crawly things because of the association between the two. So to over here, the association between the Chuda and the Aretz makes it that the word chaled is used in place of aretz in some places. And that's what they're quoting from that pasuk in Tehillim, Azinu Kol Yoshvei Chaled. Amar Rav Huna Breder Yeshua, Bivarei Denarsh. The Rashi over here says, Bivarei are beavers. So the beavers that are found in the place of Narsh, that is one possible interpretation over here. And then it would be a reference to the animal, the beaver, Einan Mina Yishuv. They spend the majority of their time in the water. They're not dry land animals. They do come onto the dry land, but they spend most of their time in the water. That would be the statement that's made here. In the context of the upcoming Gemara, there's some that have a different girsa over here, and you can see that in the Balei Tosafot. Rav Tosafot quotes the Perish Bekudshes, Bivrons, beavers, Shein Lokim Aleihem Mishum Asheretz Asheretz, Shein Gdei Lo B'Mayim. The reason that this is meaningful is that the Torah has restrictions, Lavin, for Shvatzim Al Haaretz, and has Lavin for Shvatzim B'Mayim. And you have to know, when somebody eats such a Sheretz, then that Sheretz results in a different punishment, whether it's on the Aretz or it's on the Mayim. And actually there are multiple punishments, if it's on, or multiple Lavim, if it's on the Aretz, versus the Yam, there's a difference in the number of Lavim that one would be violating. So Rashi says the Nafkamina about saying that the beavers of Narsh are mainly water animals is to tell you that it's a Sheretz Amayim and not a Sheretz Aretz. To that, the Rabbeinu Tam says, the Garsinan Bivarei Vinarsh. This is not a description of an animal. This is a description of places. And it shouldn't say in the Gemara, Bivarnei did Narsh, the beavers that come from Narsh, but rather it should read Bivarei Vinarsh. These two locations, and they are cities. And what the Memra is saying is, Bivarei Vinarsh, Einan Mina Yishuv. When the Gemara says, Einan Mina Yishuv, it's a reference to what Chazal say in other places. Koshein Bo Torah V'Derech Eretz. Anybody who doesn't have Torah Kvar Derech Eretz, Einan Mina Yishuv, doesn't belong in the civilized world or in the inhabited world. It's the same thing as a boor, according to Chazal. There's an Am Haaretz who has Derech Eretz, but doesn't have Torah. There's a Talmud Chochom that has both, and there's a boor that has neither of those. And that's what it means. These two cities are empty of Derech Eretz and of Torah. So that would be the reference here, according to the way the Rabbeinu Tam reads it. It would then connect to the previous Gemara. And it says, listen or pay heed all those that live on the land, that these people aren't part of the land. They're evil people. These are terrible people. And therefore, they're not part of Yoshvei Cholet. So that's how the Rabbeinu Tam explains the flow of the Gemara. Otherwise, it seems like the Gemara jumped tracks. Speaking about the Chodah, and whether it's on the land or not, then all of a sudden it speaks about the beavers. So it could be that the connection is the fact that chudot are only found on the land. Beavers have a din of being in the water, or mina mayim, maybe because there's some similarity between a chudah and a beaver, and given that, maybe they thought the beavers should be like the chudah. The answer is the beavers are not. They're not mina yishuv. The way that Rabbeinu Tam is reading it is the Yoshvei Cholet is a call to all those people to listen and pay heed to what Hashem says. Well, there are some people who don't pay heed because they don't live, quote-unquote, on the land. They are Rishayim. They're not Mina Yishuv. That's these places called Bivarei Vinarsh. That's the view of the Rabbeinu Tam. All right. Amar Rav Papa, B'Shamta Narsh, Tarbei, Mashkei, Va'alite. Rashi says over here that this is all an allegory and that all the people of Narsh are all evil. Therefore, kulam yu b'shamta. They should all be excommunicated. Tarbei. Tarbei, literally in Aramaic, means the fats. Mashkei means the skin. Valitei means the tail. So those are the different parts of the animal. And Rashi says that that's allegorically, it's all the different types of people that are in Narsh, from the oldest to the youngest, or from the wisest to the foolish, across the board. Basically, it's saying the city is full of evil people. And therefore, Rav Papa says, all the people of Narsh should be excommunicated, and Tarbei Mashkei Valitei. And then, the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu says, Eretz, Eretz, Eretz Shim'i Dvar Hashem. Amar Rav Papa, Lo Ava Narsh Shmoa Dvar Hashem. That the people of Narsh didn't want to hear the word of Hashem, meaning that they weren't open to hearing the Musar, or to accepting the word of Hashem, because they were all Rishayim. This is just adding to this idea that the people of Narsh are evil people, and that's why the Rabbeinu Tam prefers to explain Bivarnei v'Narsh not as being the beavers of Narsh, which would then just be that we have an associative connection over here. Ah, you mentioned the beavers of Narsh? Let me tell you a little bit about Narsh. Then, for the Rabbeinu Tam, Bivarei Vinarsh means that the whole sugya is speaking about Narsh as being full of evil people, and then this is just a continuation of that discussion. The next one is a cute little saying that people have. Amar Rav Yidol Amarav, Narsha. When people of Narsh, if you come across those people, Nashkeich Mani Kacheich. If they kiss you, you should count your teeth. They're such big thieves that if they kiss you, you should be suspicious that maybe they took one of your teeth when they walked away. Then, Nahar Pikuda, Nahar Pakud, which was also another Jewish neighborhood in Bavel, Levayach, if they accompany you, Miglima Shapira Dechazealach, that's because they saw you wearing something really nice. Again, these are thieves, and the only reason they are accompanying you or traveling with you is because the guy got wind of the fact that you have something nice on, or they see on you a nice cloak, which they want to be theirs, and therefore they're going to steal it from you. Pumpadita, from the people of Pumpadita, Liveach, if they accompany you, Ashani Ushpizech, change your motel. Don't stay in the same place, because they are expert thieves, and if they accompany you, they're eyeing what you have there. As soon as you go to sleep at night, they're going to visit wherever you're staying, and they're going to clean you out, because they are expert thieves. So over here, you have three different levels of thieves. You have a thief that can even steal the teeth out of your mouth, meaning right in front of you, and in daylight. You have another thief from Nar Pakod that will steal only things they can see, but during the daylight hours. And then you have the thieves of Pumpadita that only come at night and steal. So that's in terms of the expertise of these thieves. What is interesting is in the Gemara in Baba Batra, the Gemara notes over there that in Pumpadita, the majority of thieves were actually Jewish thieves and not even non-Jews. So Pumpadita was a heavily Jewish city, and the thieves within Pumpadita, the majority of them were Jewish. And the Tosafot quotes our Gemara over here as the proof text to the fact that Pumpadita was full of Jewish thieves, because here the Gemara quotes that and says you should be careful of the people of Pumpadita because they are such thieves. All right. Amar Rav Huna Bar Turta. Pamachat halachti lavad. At one time, I went to vad. Now, we'll see here that vad can have different meanings. One possibility is it's just a place or a city. The other possibility is lavad is a city that is an evil city, quote-unquote, because they were experts at crossbreeding. So it was a city that produced many different crossbred animals. That was their expertise, and therefore they were rishayim, because they were asuk in the practice of kilayim all the time. So that's another possibility. We'll see these two options. There could be another option, which is the vad was when they used to gather together in Babel when it came to the regel, or when it came to the meeting of the Chachamim. The Vad was the central location where the Chachamim got together, where there was a central Beit Din in general. So that could have been a totally innocuous statement when he happened to be going to the Vad. Veraiti nachash shehu karuch al atzav. Says, I saw a snake that was wrapped around a tzav, whatever this tzav is. Again, whether it's a turtle or whether it is a toad. But the snake was wrapped around it, and call it a loving embrace. The yamim yatsa arod mi benehem. From that was produced an arod. That's why I say our sugi over here favors saying that arod is a scorpion. Because if you think of it, if you have, whether it's a toad or whether you have a turtle, there you have a small item with a shell on it that is crawling around. And then you have a nachash, which stings and has a poison sting. So you put those two together, and you get a scorpion-like product that comes out from between them. So they view this arod as being a product of the kilayim that comes from a snake and a tzav. Ukishibat lifnei Rabbi Shimon HaChassid. When I came to Rabbi Shimon HaChassid and I told him this, Amar li, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God says about them, Heme viu bria shelo barati b'olami. They created something that I didn't make in my world, in essence, kilayim. I didn't create these species, and they're crossbreeding to create these species. So too, I'm going to cause a new creation to come upon them and to attack them. So if you view this as being the city of Vad was a city where they were experts in crossbreeding and they crossbred all these animals, Then, what Rabbi Shimon HaChassid is saying to Rav Huna Bar Torta, the reason you saw that, this mixed breed happening with the snake and the tzav, which it seems like they weren't doing, but happened, quote unquote, naturally, is because Hashem is bringing retribution on them. They created these terrible crossbreeds that I never created. I'm going to bring upon them a crossbreed that's going to cause them lots of problems. And that's that scorpion that comes from this crossbreeding, and that's going to attack them, and it's going to cause them problems. That's the punishment for the Rishayim of the place called Vad. That's one version of the Gemara. If you look in the Shita Mikubetzet, Ot Yud Aleph, he brings a Lishna Achrina. The Vad, Eino Makom Rishayim. Vad is not a place of evil people. He has the word being Arvad instead of Arod. So it's interesting that Shita Mikubetzet has a different pronunciation of the word. Amar Lai Reb Shimon HaChassid, it's not so surprising that you sing something like this. Hemeviu doesn't mean the people of Vaad brought about these animals. Hemeviu means, in historically, people brought these things. It's a reference to that which is mentioned in the Torah, that the Yemim, Bamidbar, which Chazal say was that he crossbred and created mules. And Chazal over there also say he was somebody that came from an illicit relationship. And so too, he created illicit, quote-unquote, breedings, which are the Yemim, the mules. People brought about Bimei Ana, Hirbiu Kilaim Yatzimehem Pered, and they created these mules. On that day, I created Gzeira, Barbot Lahem Mazikim, to create other things that are going to attack them. And the result of that was Masa Kodesh Baruch Hu Bimei Ana. That looks at this story being a more historical story about the why is he seeing this is because historically people created Kilaim, and Hashem back then said, I'm going to punish them and I'm going to bring them some sort of kilayim that will attack them. So it wasn't particular to the place Vad that was evil. It was just a generic statement. It happened to be that's where he was going, but that's not relevant to the story, as opposed to the way we have it in our Gemara, or the way that it's interpreted according to Rashi, which is that the Vad were evil people because they were crossbreeders, and Hashem says, as punished for that, I have the scorpion for them, which is also a crossbreed or an unnatural crossbreed. The Gemara says, Vamamar, this is highlights for what's coming up in Masechet Bechorot. We're about to do this in a couple of weeks. Kol shetash mishan v'iburan shaveh. Anyone who procreates in the same way and has the same gestation period, then yodim umigadim zemizeh. They can be crossbred and they can produce offspring from each other. Kol she'ein tash mishan v'iburan shaveh. Anyone who doesn't procreate in the same way and doesn't have the same gestation period, they can't reproduce and they can't have offspring that grow from that crossbreeding. Then the problem is that in the Gemara in Bechorot, it tells us that the snake is alone in having a 7-year gestation period. Whether it's really 7 years or it's just long, that means that the snake is clearly differentiated from the tzav. And if that's the case, then they don't have the same gestation period. So how could they be crossbreeding a nachash and a tzav? To that, the Gemara says, Amarav nes betok nes. It was a miracle of miracles, meaning that they don't naturally tend to each other. They don't normally reproduce, and yet they did reproduce and have a scorpion. That's how unusual this was. The Gemara to that says, what do you mean, nes betok nes? Hai purnatohu. This is a terrible thing. The scorpion is something that's dangerous, causes lots of trouble and problems for human beings. What do you mean a nes betok nes? It's not miraculous, it's terrible. Where it says, yeah, my nes betok nes, le puranut. It's exactly what it was. Hashem did this unusual thing to punish those people that crossbred items. So in order they crossbred, so as retribution for that to them, I did a miraculous thing and had two animals that don't normally get together, I had them crossbreed. Right, now we move on to the next Mishnah. Ha'iver v'basar amdudalim babeima. If you have a limb or flesh that is hanging off of an animal, meaning that it is severed from the animal, but it has not been completely severed from the animal, then mitamim tumat ochlim bimkoman. Even though they're still attached to the animal, they have a din of tumat ochlim. V'tzrichim hechsher. Anytime you have tumat ochlim requires two things. First of all, the item be ochel. And the second thing is that the item be mukshar, the kabel tumah. That's the pasuk that we find in Shmini, that it has to be yavo b'mayim, that a liquid has to come over this item in order for it to be mukshar, the kabel Tuma. So now, in this case, you have an unusual item, which is that it's still attached to the main behemah, but nevertheless, it takes on Tumat Ochlim, even though it's still attached, because it seemingly is something that's not going to go back, and eventually will detach from the animal. As Rashi notes over here, until it detaches from the animal, it doesn't gain the status of Nevela or Ever Min HaChai. So it's attached, so it doesn't have Tuma. On the other hand, it is detached enough that it can have Tuma Tochlim. The other thing Rashi says is we learned earlier that anything that is Sofol, that's a made Tuma Chamura. Anything in the end that will be Tuma Chamura. Over here, it's going to either be maybe Ever Min HaChai or Nevela, then it doesn't need Hechsher. Over here, you do need Hechsher because it is not a guaranteed outcome. And that is because if you shech the animal, then this item will be removed from the world of Tumah, even though it won't be able to be eaten when you shech the animal, because the Pasuk Basar Basadeh Trefa Lo Tochelu tells you that this detached meat or aver cannot be eaten. Nevertheless, the Shechita is successful at being Metaheret Midei Tumah. So since it's not guaranteed that it'll end up in Tumah Chamura, that's why it needs Hechsher, the Kabel Tumah. So then, we have a machloket here. Nishchata HaBeima. If the animal is shechted, Hukshiru B'damea Divi Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says the Dama Shechita is makshir this to be Mikabel Tuma. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Lo Hukshiru. These pieces of meat, aver, that are dangling from the animal, they are not Mukshara Yedei Shechita. So implied in this is that the Shechita itself is makshir the animal. The only question is it makshir the aver Hamidudal or the Basar Hamidudal as well? And that is Machloket, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon, which towards the end of today's daf we'll discuss and we'll continue all the way into tomorrow's daf. The other thing that you see here is that Ein Shechita Oseh Nipul. That when you shech the item, that doesn't cause an automatic detachment of the Basar HaMedudal or Ever HaMedudal, and therefore it still remains attached to the animal and classified as part of the animal. Because of that, the Shechita is successful at removing the Tuma from it. It does not become a Basar Min HaChai or an Ever Min HaChai, but it also doesn't become a Nevela. But because of the Pasuk, Basar Basadeh Trefalo Tuchelu, it's not mutar to eat that piece of meat. So they're partially helped by the Shechita, partially not helped by the Shechita. The only question is the Hechsher of the Shechita applicable to those items? Meita Beima. If instead of it being shechted, the animal died, habasar tzarich hechsher, then the basar requires hechsher because it was then mita osen nipul. That when the animal dies, at the moment it dies, those items that are attached to it are considered or classified as being detached at that moment. So therefore, the basar that was attached by a thread, when it dies, it's as if it detached at that moment. That means that whatever was detached has the status of what it was before. The basar would become basar min HaChai. Basar min HaChai is asur to eat, but it doesn't have tuma. If it's an aver, then the aver detaches and it becomes aver min HaChai, which means it cannot be eaten. On the other hand, it does not have tumat nevela, it has tumat aver min HaChai. The truth is that aver min HaChai also has tumat nevela, and the Gemara will have to discuss what the difference is based on the next line of the Gemara, which is ha'aver mitame mishum aver min HaChai, menu mitame mishum aver nevela. It has tumat aver min HaChai, not tumat aver nevela, divrei Rabbi Meir, which is only strange because aver min HaChai has a din of tumat nevela. You have to understand what that distinction is. Rabbi Shimon mitaher, and the Gemara will explain why Rabbi Shimon thinks that there isn't tumah over here. But again, the difference between basar min HaChai and aver min HaChai is both of them are asur, both to Jews and to non-Jews alike. But when it comes to basar min HaChai, there is no tumah. It comes Eivir Min HaChai, it has the same Tumah as Tumat Nevela. So if Mita Oseh Nipul, then the death of the animal causes them to detach, makes them into Eivir Min HaChai or Basar Min HaChai, which means now they are not allowed to be eaten by anybody. On the other hand, had they stayed attached to the animal, if it wasn't Mita Oseh Nipul, then they would have been classified as Nevela. Now Nevela still has Tumah, but it's permissible for a Ben Noach to eat the Nevela as opposed to Eivir Min HaChai or Basar Min HaChai. That would have been the difference if you said Ein mita oseh nipul. We do say mita oseh nipul. What's interesting or noteworthy over here is that when we say that the mita oseh nipul, that means that now that basar min HaChai requires hechsher. It means that you assume that it's ochlim. From here it sounds like the reason that it is ochlim is because you think about it for a goy to eat it, for a non-Jew to eat this basar, and that means that because you thought about feeding it to a ben noach, then it becomes ochel, and now ochel requires extra the kabel tumah, even though it's a sur for a ben noach to eat it, and even though it's a sur for you to feed it to a ben noach, still you can attain tumat tochlim in that situation. Gemara continues now. Tumat tochlim in, tumat nevela, lo. The case in the first part of the Mishnah, where it is Aver and Basar Medudalim, that when they are on the Behemah still attached, they have Tumat Ochlim. And then, once Shechted, you have the Machloket Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon. So now the Gemara says about it, when it's hanging on by a thread, we have that there is Tumat Ochlim in, Tumat Nevei Lo Lo. Hechidomi. E Demalin Aruka. If they will cure themselves, they can reattach themselves or regenerate themselves, so that the reason that when it's hanging off, it's not classified as a nevela, is because this item could regrow onto the animal, it could reattach itself to the animal. Then they shouldn't have tumat ochlim, because they're not separated at all. They're considered to be a part and parcel of the animal. If they are not going to regenerate or reattach themselves to the animal, tumat nevela, nami litamo. Then they should also be tamei tumat nevela, because they're already considered to be detached from the animal. There's no hope that they will reattach themselves to the animal. So then why shouldn't they have a din of tumat nevela, just like they have a din of tumat ochlim? Lo'olam de'ein malin aruka. It's a case where there's no hope medically for these evarim to reattach themselves to the animal. V'shaini tumat nevela. By tumat nevela, there's a unique item, which is, the Rachman Amar, the pasuk says, ki ipol. When it falls, ad shi'ipol, until it does fall. So the ki'ipol teaches you that only once it's fully detached from the animal that it have a din of nevela. It does not have a din of nevela before that point in time. What's interesting about the pasuk that the Gemara is quoting over here, ki'ipol minivlatam, akol zera zeirua, asher yizareya, tahor hu. If they fall onto it, then it's tahor. But then if they were chiyutan mayim al zera, if they were already mukshar the kabel tumah, then when they fall on it, v'nafal minivlatam alav, tamehu lachem. That chiyipol was speaking about a sheretz. And even though it's speaking about a sheretz, the Gemara over here is using it for a proof about animals. Our Mishnah is speaking about a basar of an animal, not a basar of a sheretz. That Rashi says, v'gabe shretzim k'tiv. This pasuk is found by shretzim. That's because Eiver min Achai by a sheretz also is mitamei. Ubitrei cry ktive gabe shratzim. By the shratzim, it has two psukim. One is v'chi pol minivlatam, and then afterwards v'chi utan mayim alzerv and nafal minivlatam alav. So the word ipol shows up twice, and what seems to be that Rashi's indicating over here is one of them is for the sheretz, one of them is unnecessary because you already know the din by sheretz. So I mean you inyan the sheretz. That seems to be the gist of what Rashi is saying over here. The latter part of the Rashi is not clear, and the Shita Mikubet said speaks about taking it out completely because it's such a difficult girsa in the Rashi over here. But nevertheless, what it seems to be saying is that even though this pasuk is from the Shvatzim, we're using it by Behema because it's an extraneous pasuk. Tosafot asks the same question, and he brings Rashi's answer down. He does indicate, and maybe this is the answer here, that even though it's written by Sheretz, it's telling you or giving you information, which is that in order for something to be called detached, it has to be nofel. And so it's really a giloi milta here by Shretzim, which says that chi pol minivlatan, when is it called a nevela? When it's completely detached. That's not just true by Sheretz. That becomes the definition of nevela at this point. And therefore, even though it's written by Sheretz, it also has application to Behema. Tanya Nami Ochi, we have a brayta that supports this contention. And they're attached by a hair's breadth. They just have like a hair holding them on. Nevertheless, you would think that they already would have tumat nevela, those pieces that are falling off. Tamalomar yipo, achi yipo. Until it fully detaches, it doesn't have a din of tumat nevela. Vafilu ochi, tumat ochlim mitamu. Despite that fact, there is still tumat ochlim. So the Braita more explicitly says what our Mishnah says and explains what the scenario is. It's a case where it's hanging on by a thread, and that makes it that it has tumat ochlim, but not tumat nevela. Misayale the Rav Chir Barashi. This is also supportive of Rav Chiya Barashi's contention. Damar Rav Chiya Barashi, Amar Shmuel, Te'enim Shitzamku Bi'ibahem. Figs that have dried out in their natural habitat, in where they're growing, on the tree. If you have a fig that dries out on the tree, Mitamot Tumatochlim. They do have a din of Tumatochlim. Batolesh Mehem B'Shabbat, Chayav Chatat. And if you pick it on Shabbat, you'll be Chayav Chatat for being Tolesh. Picking, separating something mi gidulo from its natural growth. Obviously, a moist one you're going to be chayav for. What Rav Chiya Barashi is being mechadesh is that by Shabbat, you're going to be chayav for picking it. Yet, nevertheless, it's still considered to be tomato klim. Tomato klim only applies to things that are detached, not things that are attached and still growing on the tree. So here you have a dried out fig that has a status of ochel, even though it's still attached. But for Shabbat, it's considered to be attached. So you see this concept that ochlim have a din or status of ochlim even when they're still quasi-attached, yet for other areas of halacha, they're considered attached. So just like here by the basar be'ema, it's considered attached for nevela, detached for ochlim, so too these dried figs on the tree are considered detached for ochlim, but still attached for Shabbat. So Gemara says, lema misayile. So let us say now we have another brighta, Tosefta and Uksin, that is supportive of this statement of Rav Chiya Barashi. Truth is, you're going to brought support for Rav Chiya Barashi's position from our Mishnah, but as the Bali Tosfot say, over here they wanted to also bring the point that it's considered Tolesh B'Shabbat, which is something that's not found in our Mishnah, but is in the Braita, and therefore they opted to bring the Braita as support rather than our Mishnah. Yirakot Shitzamku Be'ibahem. Vegetables that dried out on their vine. Kigon. For example, a kruv v'adlat, a cabbage or a gourd, ain mitamim tumat ochlim. They do not have tumat ochlim. Katzatzan, if you cut them off for purposes later on to have them in their dry state, whether to make a kli, to make a utensil from them, or to use them as firewood, mitamim tumat ochlim. Then they do have tumat ochlim. So if they dry out on the vine, then they don't have any din of tumat ochlim. Katzatzan v'yavshan savkadatcha. If you cut them off and dry them out, you would think that there's tumat ochlim. Eitz be'almohu. When something is dried out, it is wood. That's why when they're on the vine and they dry out, they're not tumat ochlim, because a dried gourd or a dried kruv is inedible. And so there's no tumat ochlim. So when it says, well, if you cut them and they're dry, then why is there tumat ochlim? So the answer is, you pick them with the intent of drying them out later. If you pick them and they're moist, not that you pick them and they're dry, and you're drying them out, and even though in the end you're drying them out to the point where they're going to be inedible, nevertheless, at the point when they are still moist, they have a din of tumat ochlim. That's what's being said by the Braita. Now the Gemara is midayik. Taima dekruv vidalatu. The reason that when they dry out on the vine, they don't have tumat ochlim is because they're this species of vegetables, the kruv and the dalat. Came into Yavshan, la b'nei achiloninu. Because when they dry out on the vine, they're completely inedible. Ha, Sharpe wrote, if it was any other vegetable, fruit, on the vine that dried out, mitame. They would be tame because they are edible. So the reason why there's no tomato chlim here is because it's inedible. Had it been edible, it would sound like even though it's attached and on the vine, if it's dried out, then it is classified as ochel for tomato chlim. Hey, dummy. Well, what's the scenario here? If both the vegetable or fruit and the stems are dried out, pshita, of course they're considered detached, because when you dry out the vegetable and the stem, then there's nothing left that's really holding them on. A little wind comes and they're going to be gone. They're not really attached to the main source of nutrition anymore. They won't grow anymore. There won't be anything there anymore. Ella, lav, below uktsayen. It must be that the fruit dried out, but the stems are still healthy. They're still alive there. Then, if that's the case, then it's a proof to what Rav Chiya Barashi said, which is that when you have the oketz that's alive and the fruit that's dried out, we'll classify the fruit or vegetable as being ochel, and therefore it will have tomato klim. But for Shabbat, if you pick it off, it's going to consider be picking because you have a live stem that's over there. You have something that you're detaching from something that's alive. Olam, no, Gemara says, Olam hein vuksayem. Now the case here is where both they and their stems are dried out. But we said before, that's pshita. If they're all dried out, then of course they're okay and they're considered detached because there's nothing classifying them as being attached because there's nothing really attached. Because it's on Amanati Abshan, it's Rikhale. You're right. The Reisha of the Breita or the Tosefta is not the Chiddush. The Chiddush is the Seifa of the Tosefta, which is if you cut them in order to dry them out, you still have a din of Tumat Uchlim, even though your intent is to make them inedible in the end. So don't make the diuk that other vegetables or other items are different than the Kruv and the Dulat. The whole purpose of the Reisha was just to tell us about the Seifa. That in the Reisha, these are inedible items, and that's why they're considered not to be Uchlim. And they already dried out completely to the point where they're considered detached. And by other vegetables, if they're completely dried out, everybody agrees they're considered to be detached and okel. The Chiddush of the Tosefta is the second statement, which is, if you pick them, even though you're tending to dry them out, in the interim, they do have tumat uklim, and that's enough of a Chiddush to write the remainder of that brayta, not make any tziyukim that will help Rav Chiya bar Rashi. Tashma, ilan shenifshach ubo peirot. You have a branch of a tree that was severed, and it has fruits on it. Harian kit lushim. They have a din of being detached, meaning that if you pick them on Shabbat or you take them off, that's not a problem. That's the equivalent of having grapes on their stems. When you cut them off the vine and you bring them home, they're still on their stem. You're allowed to pick those grapes and eat them off the stem on Shabbat. That's not called tolesh. It's not tolesh migidulo. It's already been detached from the gidul. And therefore these perot have a din of lushim. That's both for Shabbat and for tumat uchlim. Yabshu. So the way Rashi explains it, there's a little problem with this, with the girso over here. But Yavshu seems to be that when they're still attached, they dried out on the tree itself. Harihen kimichubarim. They have a din of being attached. Mailav, matlushim. Just like when we say they're tlushim, lechol divrayim, as we noted before, like when the grapes are taken off with their stems, so we say they're considered detached both for Shabbat and for tumat uchlim. Af mechubarim, lechol divrayim. So over here, when we say they're on the tree, they're considered to be attached, even though they've dried out, even though the fruits have dried out, they're considered attached. That's for everything, which would go against Rav Chiya bar Rashi and say that not only by Shabbat is it attached, even by the dinim of tumat uchlim it's attached. Or it says midiria. You don't have to say that. Hadikita, badikita. When you have the branch that's detached, that's detached completely, and therefore it's talush for Shabbat and it's talush for tumat uchlim. It's going to be separated completely. On the other hand, where you have the case here of Yabshu, where the Perot Ha'ilan dried out, and the branch was not detached from the tree, they're Mechubarim, over there you're going to have a bifurcation of the din. With regards to Shabbat, it's considered to be Tolesh, whereas with regards to Tumat Uchlim, it will be considered to be detached. And that's similar to what's being said in our Mishnah, that the Basar of the animal is considered attached for Nevela, but detached for Tumat Uchlim. Alright, now, Rumai says, Nishchata HaBeima. This is the Machloket, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Meir, with regards to the Shchita HaBeima, whether that's Makshir, this animal. We're now going to have a Machloket Amoraim, that's going to go for the remainder of today's daf and into tomorrow's daf. We're going to have six different opinions in the Amoraim as to what the reason behind the Machloket is of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Meir. We'll deal with two of them today. But my Kamiflegate, what is their Machloket over here? Amar Rabbah b'beima nasit yad le'ever kamiflege. They are speaking about whether the animal becomes an extension or a yad for an ever. Mar sabar ein b'beima nasit yad ever. Mar sabar b'beima nasit yad ever. They are arguing about whether the animal can become yad ever. We saw earlier on in the Masechta Machlok between Rav and Rav Yochanan whether yad exists by hechsher lekabel tuma. We know by Tumah, there's a din of Yad. The question was, is there also a din of Yad by Hechsher? That had to do with the Pasuk, the Chiyutan Mayim Ozerin Afam Niblatam Alav, Tamehu Lachem. That Lachem taught you about Yadot. Rabbi Yochanan said that Lachem is modifying the Afam Niblatam Alav, which is the Tumah, as well as Yutan Mayim Alzera, which is the Hechsher. And therefore, there's a Yad for Tumah, and there's also a Yad for Hechsher. Rav says that the lachem only modifies the nafami l'tam alav, the tamei part. It only goes lifanav, not lifnei lifanav. Obviously, according to this explanation of Rabba, he's following Rabbi Yochanan Shita that there is a yad the hefsher. And what he's saying is that you have this flesh or this meat that is hanging off the animal, and now you shech the animal. So the animal is mukshar the kabel tumah because of the dam ha-shchita, or because of the shchita itself. The question is that have application to the items that were hanging off? So what Rabba suggests, the machloket over here, is whether that basar that's hanging off, can you make the animal, which is the larger part, be a yad, be an extension to allow the hechsher, the kabel tumah, to happen over here? And as Rashi says over here, tarvayu idlu yesh yad hechsher. They both think that there is a yad hechsher, but Rabbi Shimon says, you can't say the larger animal is a yad for this basar or aver that's hanging off. It's not logical. Whereas Rabbi Meir says, yes, the animal is a yad, the hechsher, and therefore you can have it be makshirit, the kabel tumah. Abaye amar, bochez bakatan, vein gadol oloimo kamiflige. The machloket is not about whether it's a yad aver. Here Rashi says, kuli ama ena beiman asid yad aver echad. Everybody agrees here that the animal is not a yad aver. Question is, are they a singular unit? Because they're attached. So that Abaye says, the machloket is, how do you determine what is a singular unit? Is the test picking up the larger item or picking up the smaller item and seeing the other one comes along, and that's their machloket over here? That is based on Mishnayot in Tvuyom and in Uksin, whereby determining when items are considered a singular unit and when they're considered as separate units. Over there, one of the tests is, when you pick up one item, does the other item come along with it? So generally, when you pick up the larger item, the smaller item comes along. The question is, when you pick up the smaller item, does the larger item come along with it? So some say that the test for chibur is simply if you pick up the larger item, the small item comes with it, then they're mechubarim, they're considered to be attached. On the other hand, there's another view that the test is when you pick up the smaller item, that the larger item comes with it. That's a much harder test, much higher threshold. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here, that is their machloket. Here, clearly, if you pick up the aver that's detached, or you pick up the basar, the animal's not coming along with it. If you pick up the behemah, then those items will come along with it. So when you pick up the smaller one, the behemah would detach. If you pick up the bigger one, the behemah, the aver amududal, the basar amududal, would come along with it. Is that considered to be mechubar or not? Marsa v'ruches v'katan men gadol imo. When you hold the small one and the larger one doesn't come with it, it's still considered a chibur, because vice versa, if you pick up the big one, the small one come along with it, therefore they're attached. That's the view of Rabbi Meir. That's why you have a hechsher, the kabel tumah over here. Umar Savar and Rabbi Shimon believes ain't no kamo. It doesn't have the same status. Because if you picked up the small one, the big one doesn't come with it, they're not considered connected. Va'af, Rabbi Yochanan Savar, and also Rabbi Yochanan thinks, bokeis bekatan me gadoli moimo kamiflege. Just like Abaye explained the machloket this way, so too Rabbi Yochanan explains the machloket this way. That the machloket here is about whether it's considered to be a singular unit or not. The Rabbi Yochanan Rami. Rabbi Yochanan brings the stira in Rabbi Meir. The Rabbi Meir or the Rabbi Meir. Mi amar Rabbi Meir ochez bekatan ben gadol oleimo harehu kem mohu. Did Rabbi Meir really say that when you pick up the smaller item, even if the bigger item doesn't come along, it's still considered to be one unit, because if you picked up the bigger one, the smaller one would come along with it. Viraminu, we have a Mishnah in Tvuyom. Ochel shenifras. You have food that detached. Umeure b'miksat. It has small attachments. It has fibrous attachments that still keep it connected. Rabbi Meomer, mochez b'katan. If you hold the small one, v'gadol oleimo, hari ukemo. Then if you hold the small one and the big one comes along with it, it has the same din. Bimlav, ainu kamo. If not, it doesn't. The ochel we're speaking about here is obviously a truma, because a tvul yom is a sheni the tuma, which doesn't impact on kulin, but can make a shlishi by truma, but that's the end of the line for truma. So if the items are considered to be one unit, then the tvul yom impacts on both items. If it's considered to be separate items, then the tvul yom affects the item he touched, but the other item would be a revi, the tuma, which doesn't exist in truma, and therefore it would be tahor. So whether it's a chibur or not has impact over here. So you see here that Rabbi Meir says the test is picking up the small one and seeing if the big one comes along with it. So if that's the test according to Rabbi Meir, then what's he doing over here in our Mishnah saying just the opposite? That over here the big one is the test, not picking it up from the small one. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan says, Mukhlefet Hashita. It's clear here that Rabbi Meir has a difference of opinion. Mukhlefet Hashita sometimes means that you should switch the positions because it's not consistent, or it means that Rabbi Meir, quote unquote, is out of sorts over here. He's not following his opinion everywhere else in Shas. Now, What's very interesting about this, the Balei Tosafot already note this, it says, Hachi Garsinan B'Sfarim. The Girsa that we have here is the Girsa that is found in all the Sfarim. If you actually go to the Mishnah that they're quoting, which is in Tfuyom, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Aleph, I'll read you the Mishnah. Kol Yadot Ochlim, Shem Chibur B'Avatuma, Chibur B'Tfuyom. Anything that's attached or considered attached for Navatuma is also considered attached for Tvuyom. Ochel Shenifras, Umeure Mimiksat, that's exactly why we're quoting him here. Rabbi Meomer, Imo Chez Begadol, Vekatan Oleimo. If you hold the big one, and the Katan comes along with it, Harihu Kamo, and it's exactly alike. It's the exact opposite of what Rabbi Meir says here. The way the Gemara is quoting Rabbi Meir over here is if you pick up the small one and the big one comes along with it, then it's considered attached. The Mishnah in Tvuyom, when you go see the Mishnah there, it says just the opposite. But it says, Rabbi Meir, Mary, Mechlez Bagadol. If you hold the big one, and the small one comes along with it, then Harei Ukamo. That's exactly aligned with Rabbi Meir's position everywhere else. So why is our Gemara quoting the Mishnah from Tvuyom as being a totally different Mishnah than is actually found in the Mishnayot in Tvuyom? V'lahaf Girsa Tema. According to that Girsa, my parik ha'chad the Rabbi Meir the Meir. What is the question that's being said over here in terms of Rabbi Meir and the Meir? So Tosfot leaves that as Itzarachiyun, but you can see here that in the Mesorah Shasi says, Ayin Tosfot Yom Tov Tvul Yom. And over there, the Tosfot Yom Tov discusses the possibility that Rabbi Yochanan's statement over here was influential in changing the Girsa and the Mishnah. The original Girsa of the Mishnah is what's been quoted here in the Bavli. The question of Rabbi Yochanan, that it's Mukhlevet Ashita, is the opposite way of how Rabbi Meir explains this throughout Shas, then caused them to change the Girsa on the Mishnah Tvuyom to accord with Rabbi Meir's position all through Shas, which is that when you pick up the big one, that's the determining factor. So it's just interesting to note that Balei Tosfot pointed out already that our Mishnayot have a totally different Girsa than the Mishnah that's being quoted here in the Gemara. Gemara says, Dilma Shani le Rabbi Meir ben Tvuyom l'shar Tumot. Maybe Rabbi Meir differentiates between Tvuyom and other Tumot, and therefore, that's why he has a different view by Tvuyom. Tvuyom, Rashi says, Dilma Apagav the Meiko Rabbi Meir but Tvuyom. Because Rashi says, Shehu Tuma mid Rabbanan. It's only Tuma mid Rabbanan. Machmirhu betuma chamura. Maybe the reason Rabbi Meir's position everywhere else is that if you pick up the big one, then if the little one comes along, that's enough to be a chibur. By Tvuyom, which is a lighter form of Tuma, he has a higher standard and says if you pick up the small one, the big one comes along, that would be the difference in Rabbi Meir's position. Rashi says something very difficult. He says that Tumat Tvuyom is Mid Rabbanan. It's not true. Tumat Tvuyom is Mid Doraita. And Rabbi Akiva Eiger points that out. He says, Vitzar Chiyon Godo. He says, yes, the Tumat Tvuyom is more Lekula than in other Tumot. And that's true on a Doraita level. It is on a lower level of Tumat than many other Tumot. But that's all on a Doraita level. It's on a Torah level. There's no Din Dorabonin versus Din Doraita. It's even on the Doraita level, and he says that he doesn't really understand what Rashi's comment is referencing to over here. Gemara says, you can't say that, because Tanya, Rabbi Omer, Echad Tvuyom ve'echad Shar Tumot. Doesn't matter whether it's a Tvuyom or other Tumot. Gemara says, V'doma v'Rabbi lo Shanile. Maybe according to Rabbi, there's no difference. Ula Rabbi Meir, Shanile. And according to Rabbi Meir, there is a difference, and that's why, or that explains the difference in Rabbi Meir's opinion. Tamar Rabbi Shaya, Hachi Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Then the way to properly quote Rabbi Yochanan in this instance is the Divrei Rabbi. According to Rabbi, who says there's no difference between Tumah Chamura and Tvuyom with regards to the din of Chibur and Heksher, then Mukhlevet Hashita, that Shita of Rabbi Meir is different or differentiated from Shita all over Shas. Okay, we're going to stop here. We've completed two explanations of this Machloket of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon, one of which is that they're arguing as to whether the animal can be a yad, to be machshir, the smaller item, and that's their machloket, whether you can view the behemah as a yad to these other items. That's Rabba's view of their machloket, and then Abaye's view of the machloket, and we said that Rabbi Yochanan seems to say the similar thing, is their machloket, as everybody agrees, the animal's not a yad for the animal. The question is there a chibur? They're considered one entity, and that depends on how you measure single entity. Whether you measure it by picking up the small item, picking up the larger item, and that's their machloket over here. And as an aside, we brought what seemingly is a stira in Rabbi Meir's position between what is said here, where he says the test is based on the larger one, which is what he says in the Mishnah, in Tvuyom, where he says that picking up the smaller one is the test. It's just to know that this does have halachic ramifications, and that is with regards to lechem mishneh on Shabbat, where you need the chalot to be shleimot. The test for whether a chala is shleima or not is when you pick it up. For instance, when you cut into the chala, which is the practice of many Ashkenazim, that before they make a motzi, they make a small cut into the chala, and then they continue to cut afterwards. Or if you do have a cut in the chala, how do you know whether it's still deemed to be shleim or not? So the test for that is, if you pick up the smaller side, and the larger side comes along with it, that's still considered to be attached. If you pick up the smaller side and the larger side falls away from it, that's considered to be detached, like we saw in this Mishnah in Tvuyo. That is brought down the halacha in determining whether a challah is considered to be a shalem or a single entity or two different pieces. All right, we're going to stop here. 8 lines down on the top of Kufav Chet Amud Aleph.